So welcome to another episode of the Danube Institute's new geopolitical podcast series, A Matter of Perspective, in which we will deal with the security issues of the ongoing U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. I'm Tamás Orbán, research fellow of the Danube Institute in Budapest, and my guests today are László Vasa, a chief advisor and senior research fellow of the Hungarian Institute for Foreign Affairs and Trade, as well as Anton Benderzhevsky, director of research of the Danube Institute, and Jeffrey Kaplan, an American-born professor and distinguished research fellow of the Danube Institute. Welcome, gentlemen. Before moving on to the possible implications of this withdrawal, I'd like us to talk about a bit the war in Afghanistan from a historical perspective. Can you summarize a bit the United States' goals behind the Afghan intervention in 2001? And if you look at the past 20 years, how did they manage realizing these goals? Or to put it more bluntly, is the withdrawal a sign of success or a sign of failure?
Oh.
Anton?
You have multiple questions packed in one. Well, in the media, sometimes the journalists are comparing American intervention in Afghanistan to Soviet Union's war in Afghanistan. However, there is quite a difference between them. Soviet Union at that time wanted to control Afghanistan, to increase its sphere of interest. However, in case of United States, the situation is completely different. The intervention in Afghanistan was an answer to terrorist attacks of 2001. So basically, the main goal of the war in Afghanistan from perspective of United States was some kind of retaliation and capturing those terrorist organizations which were operating from Afghanistan, which were supported in part by the Taliban movement. So they never wanted to, at least their primary goal was never to establish a control zone, however, to make the country or the region safe at once and to show the world that it's not possible to attack United States because there will be a big retaliation against that. So I think we have to check American war in Afghanistan from this perspective, that the main goal was always to attack the terrorists being there, and in this regard they succeeded, right? The Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan, at least Al-Qaeda was wiped out. Osama bin Laden was killed in 2011. So this part was successful from American point of view. However, establishing a safe and stable state in Afghanistan was a clear failure. They didn't succeed in that, but that was not their primary goal, I think. Soviet Union did not succeed in this regard. America did not succeed in this regard. And over 100 years ago, Great Britain, the British Empire, did not succeed in this regard to establish a European or Western style state in Afghanistan. It has never worked and did not work in case of United States as well.
Mm. So why did the Biden administration decide to pull out now? What's so special about this timing? Jeffrey, maybe you could tell us something about it.
Well, essentially, the Trump administration were the ones that first decided to pull out, and they were defeated in the election. The Biden administration took the Trump deadline and pushed it back a couple of months. But essentially, it was America's longest war. It had no end goals. And that's the problem whenever you get into a conflict. You've got to have objectives. And we never really did have an objective. Catching Osama bin Laden was the first. We failed to do that. We stayed on and on because I think the specter of the American decision after the Soviet withdrawal was playing very much in everybody's minds. that we, the Soviets left, it left a vacuum, and America could have stepped in non-militarily, but simply to stabilize the situation. And the decision was logical enough. It would have been an endless drain on the treasury and probably not successful. So they fell into an absolutely horrible civil war, tribal conflict, militia conflict, and essentially it became unlivable. So when the Americans failed to get the Al-Qaeda completely destroyed, when Osama bin Laden escaped, were we going to pull out? And the decision was no. And in fact, they expanded into Iraq a short time later. So it was a, you know, it's a grand failure. How many lives do you want to give to a policy that really has no end game, that has no objectives? It simply got to be too much.
Actually, it's interesting if you see a different perspective on the issue of Afghanistan from a point of view of United States, European point of view, or a Russian point of view. And as we are present here in Hungary, in Budapest right now, we can talk in completely different perspective. United States in the last two decades was always talking about Afghanistan as success. If you check the interviews of Minister of Defense, for example, in 2004-2005, they were claiming that they managed to stabilize the situation, everything is going fine, now the women have much different rights than in case of Taliban. However, if we see the situation now, 20 years past the start of the war, we can see that they did not succeed. The government which was established in Afghanistan is probably not going to survive in the next half year or maybe a year, but I don't think they will survive for the next year. If we check the perspective of Russia, they were always claiming that United States failed completely. They're doing the situation as even worse. Everything will be destabilized in Central Asia. It will have implications to Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and to Russia as well. So it's quite interesting to see how this different perspective, how they're colliding and what is the real situation. Because, yeah, in part, as I mentioned before, the primary goal, I think, was reached because we didn't see such massive attacks on the United States since that time. Osama bin Laden was killed, so the terrorist activity in Afghanistan basically was cleared out. However, the other part of the story was not a success at all.
Thank you. Well, you touched a lot of issues from what I am going to ask you next, but let's jump into it. So now we're going to talk about the possible consequences, as you see it. First, we're going to start with the domestic level. Then we go for a wider regional level, and then we're going to see what's going to happen globally, who are the interested parties, and what implications it could have regarding Central Europe, if any, but I imagine it will. So there's a lot to unpack here. First of all, you've already touched this, but I wanted to ask, how do you see the capabilities of this current government of Afghanistan? Will it be able to stand its ground against the Taliban? And if not, can we expect a swift takeover like in Vietnam?
1973,
yeah. Exactly. Or is there a possibility of a more complex civil war like in the early 90s in Afghanistan with different factions and tribal militias fighting each other for a prolonged period? Which one is more likely, Jeffrey?
I don't like to be pessimistic about a country I really love, which is Afghanistan. It's a fantastic place, wonderful people.
You've been there, right?
I've been there many times, but the fact is both. Already the Afghan military is in the process of collapse. A lot of them have escaped over the border. There is very little chance that the central government will survive. the Taliban, according to the American Joint Chiefs of Staff, as of today, is quoted as saying that the Taliban are inevitable. They will take over. But will they be able to control the country? Nobody's ever controlled the country. They've never had a stable government. It's always been successful governments in Afghanistan have always been able to balance tribal alliances, always shifting. The Taliban aren't able to do that. So there will be a momentary stasis. The Taliban said they're not the same Taliban that ruled before. They're the kinder, gentler Taliban, and women will be protected and everybody will be happy. When that doesn't happen, I think that tribal warfare, as is the history of Afghanistan, is inevitable.
Mm-hmm. So you think if the Taliban manages to take Kabul, the capital, and manages to impose a new regime, just as an interesting side note, how would that regime look like in reality? Would it immediately mean introducing Sharia law, for example?
Yes, would have to, because that's the Taliban's leitmotif. But you'd need Sharia law, Sharia courts. Under the original Taliban with Mullah Omar, it was a very savage form of Sharia, and that's because the people who were enforcing it really had no education. They were not clerics. They were not ulama or men of religion. They were not scholars. They were guys who grew up with guns, and they took over with very, very limited Islamic education. That's changed a bit, and there's now two Talibans, one in Afghanistan, one in Pakistan, and they're quite different. Be that as it may, do they have the means to actually effectively govern a country? It remains to be seen. Very doubtful.
Thank you. Now, if we move to a bit wider regional level, and this will be an especially fitting question for Laszlo and Anton, because both of you guys just recently attended an international security conference in Tashkent, Uzbekistan, which is by no coincidence that was organized during this withdrawal. What was your impressions at the conference? What are the most important security issues and challenges of the neighboring countries face, first especially in Central Asia? Laszlo.
Thank you. Well, the atmosphere of the conference was like an utopistic, optimistic issue because the very high representatives of the neighboring countries and of the region, even the Russian foreign minister was there in person. They were talking how to connect Central Asia and South Asia in infrastructural terms. However, if Afghanistan is not a stable point between the two regions, how they want to establish any corridors? And yes, there were several plans, and in the open and public speeches, everybody expressed the interest for peace and cooperation. And as a side note, I would like to add that this is I don't know the it is again an initiative which is coming not in an endogene way from Central Asia, but by external powers. Because if we look at the on the region, then we can see that Russia is having interest, China having interest, for sure Pakistan and India as a middle power, even Turkey is having, and Iran for sure. So it is absolutely not easy to find the common points. Infrastructure seems to be that point. However, once again, if Afghanistan will fail, we cannot realize any infrastructural project, but we have to deal probably the problem of migration. Back to the conference, when we were discussing among each other, so in a non-public way with key persons, even from the Afghan government, they told, yes, it is clear the Taliban will take over. However, the impression and the expectations are that that won't be so brutal than expected based on the previous examples like 15 years ago or something like this. Moreover, the neighboring countries already are doing publicly or non-publicly, I'm not sure, but officially they are already doing negotiations with the Taliban, including Uzbekistan, including Iran, including China, including Russia. So it seems that the big and the middle powers are already prepared for this version. I just made a discussion or a conversation with an officer from the Afghan government, and they told that they are not really expecting any big changes in the government structure. So not everybody will be fired because in this case the government wouldn't work. So for sure new ministers will come, new state secretaries, but the officers will remain because the state administration should be run somehow. Anton can probably agree with me, but that atmosphere was really unique in that term that Afghanistan was that time, this is meaning 1 week ago, almost fully occupied by the Taliban. It was 80% of the district
80%,
was occupied, and we were talking, even Kabul was endangered and bombed somehow, and we were talking about how to plan and realize the corridor which is leading to the sea. It is clear that we were allowed only to the public discussion, so I'm sure that in behind several very serious decisions were made, and these will be clear and these will be announced in the coming weeks, I'm sure. I don't know how this.
Yeah, I can absolutely support your point of view. It was a bit surreal. There was the Prime Minister of Pakistan, Imran Khan, and the President of Afghanistan, Ashraf Ghani. And Ashraf Ghani made a keynote speech, and he was talking about fourth industrial revolution, digital revolution, and it was like everybody was listening to him, but on the other hand, at least myself, but I guess the people in the big conference hall as well, were thinking, okay, we are talking about industrial revolution, but the country is about to collapse, right? There is a high probability of a civil war coming, and the president of the country is talking about the transformation, digital transformation of the country. So it was pretty surreal experience. I'm not sure if the president of Afghanistan wanted to just paint a good picture about Afghanistan, or he's really not aware of what's happening with the country right now. On the other hand, it was also interesting to see how optimistic are the Uzbek officials, because in the last weeks. The fighting in Afghanistan was happening at Uzbek's borders and Tajikistan's borders, and several thousands of people fled the border and came to Uzbekistan. Mainly soldiers who were protecting the borders, Afghan soldiers. So they wanted to. They were seeking a refugee in Uzbekistan. So it will be a problem for Uzbekistan. They can see that the Taliban are controlling now the borders at Uzbekistan, controlling the borders of Tajikistan. Basically, they are controlling the borders at Iran as well, I think. So it's starting to be an issue. And at the same time, I was talking to an official of Uzbekistan, a minister appointed to for Afghanistan's affairs. And he was talking about that, well, if the government changes, then probably it won't be a problem. If the Taliban, meaning that if Taliban are going to come to power, because Uzbekistan has a neutral position to Afghanistan's internal affairs, so for them, according to the official, it wasn't really matter if it's the government of Ashraf Ghani or the government of Taliban, because they are thinking that when Taliban come to power, if that will happen, they will it will be a completely different government than it was in 1996 when they managed to grab control in the country. So they think they won't be so radical. They will That will give rights to women. What, basically, that's what Taliban are saying, but I don't think that we can really believe all of that without criticism, because, of course, yeah, maybe we will see it in a year or half a year, but it's quite strange that the government was so optimistic about the changes.
Thank you. Well, both of you touched the issue of migration and deserters at the border. Do you think the countries of Central Asia are prepared for the inevitable wave of refugees coming from during the next 2 to 3 years? And also, do you think that this kind of situation will prompt some kind of Central European solidarity between the 5 countries, or they will deal with it separately?
Regarding the refugee issues, Turkmenistan already built its fence on the border, several hundred kilometers. I know it very well because one of the Hungarian companies was a constructor for that. And the owner is a good friend of mine. It is a fact. And I'm not really sure that the refugees will head to the north. Most likely they will go to the west. That is at least the experience. Turkish colleagues reported there that already they got some few hundred thousands of refugees since the Taliban started to take over on the regions. I think they told 400,000 refugees they have from Afghanistan in Turkey.
And the government has not even collapsed yet.
Yeah. For sure, after the takeover of the government by Taliban, I'm sure that especially the middle class will wait what the future brings, and thereafter they will decide where to go, but most likely to the east and to the west, but not to Central Asia. For sure, these countries have some facilities and some infrastructure for refugees in this term, but as this push by the Taliban seems to be quite quick, but it is taking place in several months, in fact. So those who are feeling their life is endangered and their family's life is endangered, they already left. The question is Kabul and how the new government will work and what kind of new laws will be introduced. But frankly, the life in Kabul under this government is not like in Western countries. So it is almost looking like a Sharia law already, because it is forbidden to sell alcohol. For sure, women and the children have right to go to the school and so on. But basically, the system is very strict already, people just told that okay. So if the government and the whole new system won't be harder than Saudi Arabia, then probably it will be accepted by the international community.
Well, I think for Central Asia, it's going to be a real problem. Josep Borrell, the so-called foreign minister of European Union, high representative of foreign affairs of the European Union, was there, and he also said that the Taliban coming to power in Afghanistan is going to be a real serious problem for Central Asia because of question of stability and the question of radical Islamism, because right now the countries of Central Asia, and in political point of view, we are talking now about Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan. They are mostly quite secularized countries, so you won't see any kind of radicalism in these countries. You can freely buy alcohol. People are quite consuming it. The rights of the women are respected. They are represented in the parliament. They are working. They have higher education. You can see machetes, of course, in the country, but they are not so widespread. I mean, it's not like they're on every corner. And this is the heritage of basically of the Soviet Union, that these countries are not so radicalized as for example, countries in the Middle East. And in the last years, maybe it also started in the 90s, I'm not sure about it, but especially because of the spread of the new digital technology, the spread of this radical Islamism is becoming much easier. And because the Taliban movement, which is known of their radical Islamic direction, is going to be a neighbor of these countries, the spread of the thoughts has already started. For example, in the Russian media, you can find, or in the media of Central Asian countries, you can find more and more concerns about it. The spread of radical thoughts in Telegram channels, in encrypted channels among the youth, it's already happening, and this might be an issue for the countries. And now coming back to Uzbekistan, which organized the conference which we've been attending to, Uzbekistan made a tremendous transformation in the last 5 years after the current president, Shavkat Mirziyoyev, came to power. They want to be a regional power, and actually they are bordering each of the countries in Central Asia around them. However, it won't work if there is a country with a civil war going on in the neighborhood. The country which has, which is spreading radical Islamist thoughts around it. So for Uzbekistan and the cooperation of the Central Asian countries, it's really an important issue to have a stable country right in the neighborhood. So it can be a really game changer if Afghanistan changes in a different direction.
So if I understand you right, is there a possibility that Uzbekistan is going to intervene in some way, maybe not militarily, but diplomatically or economically?
Well, based on their optimistic approach, it's right now it's kind of unlikely. So they're really hoping for the best, that some miracle will happen in Afghanistan. And but even if Taliban won't spread their thoughts around to other countries, we have to remember that, and I don't want to be really negative about the Taliban movement and so on, but they were hosting, or basically they were allowing the presence of other terrorist organizations on the territory of Afghanistan when they came to power in 1996. For example, Al-Qaeda was one of them, but there was around 30 or 40 other terrorist organizations. And we can't hope for the best that right now when they come to power they won't support, or not support, but at least just let them leave on the territory of Afghanistan. And this can be a real danger for everybody around Afghanistan.
Thank you. What about the Middle East though? Because that's a whole different issue than Central Asia. And Jeffrey, can you tell us a bit about the possible implications of this instability in terms of the Middle East power structures or dynamics?
The Middle East would be a very big question. In terms of the refugees, to make it a smaller, more easily handled question, the countries that are most involved would be Iran and Pakistan. Iran is very concerned, because there is one Shiite tribe in Afghanistan, the Hazara. And the last time the Taliban were in power, when they had nothing better to do, they would attack the Hazara. I mean, it's a national sport. A lot of people were killed, and the Hazara looked to the Iranians because of the Shiite connection. There is very likely to be an exodus to Iran among the Hazara, and that would be something Iran is not doesn't wish and isn't really prepared for. Pakistan has a bigger issue, which is the other wing of the Taliban are there. The Haqqani network is there. And to try to talk about the Taliban just in isolation in Afghanistan is interesting, but they don't exist in isolation. They're very connected to the Taliban in Pakistan, which is a much more radical organization these days. So there's a push-pull there. There will be refugees traditionally escape through the tribal territories into Pakistan. So these are the two countries that would be most immediately affected. The Gulf has its own problems, which is that they're largely an expat workforce. And radical ideas go through the expat community into these countries. And working in Saudi Arabia for a couple of years quite recently, it has a huge impact, even among people who are from military background. In talking to or training these young cadets, almost all of them had family members who joined a radical movement, particularly Daesh or ISIS. And these ideas simply permeate the Gulf region. So you can't say, you know, to talk about Afghanistan in isolation or in simply regional terms is extremely important, but there are global implications, and they're fascinating. You know, it's that would be a podcast in itself.
Well, that's what I want to move on to. The global consequences. Do you think, any of you, that the withdrawal will cause significant changes in the current spheres of influence of the world powers active in the region? Or this is simply not the Cold War anymore? Better yet, does the US leave behind a power vacuum? Such a power vacuum that it will be necessarily that other global strategy competitors will show up and try to fill that?
Actually, already showed up, as the US has no more interest in the region, not only in Afghanistan, but also not for Central Asia. Actually, the Western powers are not interested in Central Asia. So, logically, China and Russia appears, in the case of Afghanistan, for sure, Pakistan and also India is quite active. But when it comes to the broader region, in Central Asia, the game players are Russia, China, and more or less Turkey. Actually, what the European Union representatives told on this conference, it was going about the nothing, completely nothing. Almost the same for the U.S. High Representative there. So it was absolutely clear that they don't care anymore. For sure, they would like to increase the trade and probably investments in the region, but they have no more interest how to make a better democracy. It failed anyhow, and they not really need it in the region. It was clear. And thus, when it comes to the European Union, which is not a power, I just wrote an academic paper on it some one year ago. That was a kind of criticism of the EU new strategy on Central Asia, which is still going about the nothing. So it is absolutely not clear what the European Union is willing to do there, and what are the plans there out of the gender balance and the democracy, and how to support the market economy and so soft things. And U.S. just left. So for sure, the U.S. is having some very good connection, let's say, with Turkmenistan, which is a surprise, because we know only really few things about Turkmenistan, but they are a big friend of the U.S. still. But they have no more bases in the region anymore. And if they have no more bases, but the Russians have, then it is absolutely clear who can be the players. And as I mentioned, China and Russia both, they are having negotiations with the Taliban, and both of them are having a big impact on the Central Asian countries and economies.
I partly agree that for Russia and China are the one who are competing now in the region. From Central Asia, for sure. However, in terms of Afghanistan and definitely the question of the power vacuum there, I think it's more of a headache for them, for both for Russia and for China. I think they don't really know what to do now with Afghanistan, because apparently even United States did not succeed in their operations in Afghanistan. They poured a lot of money in the country. At the highest point, there were, I think, 180,000 American troops allocated there, and they did not succeed in stabilizing and transforming the country. And now I think Russia is pretty concerned about the destabilization of the region. We know that Tajikistan already asked for help of Russia, asking for because of the possible migration crisis and the destabilization of the border control. And now, as United States is going away, Russia has to deal somehow with the problem. And I'm not sure they're prepared for it, and they have a prepared answer what to do with Afghanistan right now.
I would disagree in part with that, which is they're dealing with the Chinese. Because 6 or 7 years ago, I was working in China, and one of the most ambitious parts of the One Belt, One Road plan was development in Afghanistan, because they are incredibly rich in resources, particularly mineral resources. And the Chinese were simply waiting for things to stabilize enough for them to move in economically. And you would hear discussion among Afghan intellectuals that say, well, this sounds an awful lot like the road that the Russians built once upon a time. And we, you know, it was a north-south road. It was our first paved road. And we knew they were going to come rolling down it. And the Chinese will as well, but not militarily. Economically. And economically, they could have a tremendous impact. So I think China has a lot to benefit. Russia has a lot to worry about.
And if, going back to what you said, Laszlo, about the European Union, perhaps they will care about Afghanistan when another refugee wave comes. Do you think it's a possibility? In the European Union, what's going to happen in Central Europe, or regarding Hungary, can it be another problem like what we've seen in 2015?
Sure, it can, but the key there is Turkey, for sure, because Turkey can stop these waves. The question is whether Turkey has any plans to stop them or using them against Europe for their interests there, but after the Taliban will take over, it's a good question what any power, I mean Western powers, could be do there, because at this stage, as far as I know, let's say the European Union expressed that if the Taliban comes to power, they won't negotiate with them because they are terrorist or representing a terrorist organization or things like this. It's a good question how this approach will be changed when in fact the Taliban will govern the country. But at least negotiations and discussions with Afghanistan would be needed in case of this kind of type of emergency of refugee situation somehow. But the question is whether these negotiations will take occur or not.
And I know at least another power besides Turkey, which can use the situation with the migrant crisis, is Belarus. Because in the last 1.5 months, they were intentionally sending migration flows to Poland and the Baltic countries, mainly Lithuania. It was part of the policy after the famous Ryanair incident in May. They said that all the migrants who came basically through either through Russia or directly to Belarus from Afghanistan, Iraq, for example, or even Syria, They said that, okay, now we are not helping them, and they even showed the path to through the border to Lithuania. So Lithuania is building a big fence now on the border of Belarus and Lithuania. It's like 500 kilometers long fence, and European Union is actually supporting financially the building of the fence. So it's an issue for European Union, and Belarus is also another country which can use the migration flows in their political intentions. And as we see that the migrants from Afghanistan are going to Uzbekistan, to Tajikistan, so to the nearby borders, also Pakistan claimed that they have at least 3 million Afghan migrants allocated there. It's a growing issue, and it's of course it's an important question of security. Another question for Central Europe as well, as I mentioned before, that Uzbekistan's transformation policy made real good opportunities for European companies to come to the country. Hungarian companies, for example, are already present in Kazakhstan, and now they're coming to Uzbekistan as well. So if the situation will worsen in Afghanistan, which could affect the nearby countries as well, it could endanger the Central European capitals and their opportunities, which have risen in the past decade.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for your participation. It's been a tremendously interesting discussion, and I hope we can meet 1 year from now and see if we were spot on or what we have missed. Thank you for being here, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Good.